Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Academic scholarships are automatically offered to eligible students upon admission, and all Luther students receive some form of financial aid. Luther.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Stafford Rosenbaum, a Wisconsin-based law firm celebrating 145 years of commitment to practical legal solutions in areas such as family law and estate planning. StaffordLaw.com.
The heads of some of America's biggest companies are rethinking corporations' role in society. 181 CEOs from the Business Roundtable Lobbying Group issued a statement on Monday. It says it will no longer put shareholders first. Instead, the group says the goal will be to put employees, the environment, and general society on the same level as stockholders. The move comes during a time of increasing frustration towards corporate America over income inequality, harmful products, political influence, and poor working conditions. So what would this revised definition of the purpose of a corporation look like in practice? Nancy Kane is a historian at the Harvard Business School and author of Forged in Crisis, The Power of Courageous Leadership in Turbulent Times. Nancy, good to have you back on the show.
Always a pleasure, Judith.
First off, let's start with a really basic question. What exactly makes a business a corporation?
A corporation is a legal structure that is an organizing concept in which the entity, right, is owned collectively by shareholders. It needn't be a public corporation, that is, a company that floats its stock on the public markets. You can have private corporations, but corporation is a legal entity defined primarily by the means and structure of ownership of that company.
And for at least the past 50 years or so, the role of corporations was pretty clearly thought to maximize profit for those shareholders. Tell us about that idea and how we saw that in real life.
So for much of the 20th century, I'm a historian, so just to back the tape up very briefly, for much of the 20th century, say well into the 1970s, the unstated and at times articulated goal or purpose or objective of a public corporation was of course to deliver value to the owners of a public corporation, which are its shareholders, but it also included this largely unstated but nonetheless very well understood social contract, which had to do with, you know, often long-term employment for its workers, a sense of rootedness in communities. This was an age when a lot of American business was still primarily based in America, and the obligations that go with that rootedness, a sense of responsibility for and mutually beneficial obligations to its suppliers, the other businesses with which it made its commerce. And all of that began to change, that sense of broad-based obligations and priorities for public corporations began to change in largely unarticulated ways in, say, the late 1970s, early 1980s, gaining a great deal of speed in the 1990s, partly as a result of the increasing globalization of business, partly as a result of a set of academic work that came out that said, if you have people in control of companies that own the companies as opposed to managers who didn't have stock in the companies, you would get better outcomes for the companies. And partly as a result of what a series of people inside and outside business have called the financialization of the American economy, in which all kinds of organizations that dealt in lending markets and different kinds of financial markets became much, much more important. And Wall Street became much more important. And all those different threads emerged with help from people like Milton Friedman, who had said a long time ago, the University of Chicago economist, that the purpose of a public corporation is to maximize profit for its shareholders. All those different threads in the way that history is made resulted in this unquestioned and yet, you know, very, very firmly adhered to idea that the purpose of any public business is to maximize value for shareholders, implicitly elevating and then explicitly elevating the shareholder above the employee, above the community, above political contribution in the sense of how do we do our business, above the environment, above their vendors or suppliers. And so we have arrived at a point where now a number of different very prominent CEOs are saying on paper that needs to change, that unquestioned adherence to maximizing value for shareholders needs to change and make way for a broader set of obligations that look reminiscent of the company that our parents or grandparents grew up with.
We're talking with Nancy, Harvard Business School, and we're talking about a new initiative by a group called the Business Roundtable to say that making profit isn't the most important thing that corporations should be focusing on. They should be focusing on things like impact on the environment, how they treat their employees, and so on. And Nancy, tell us a little more about this group, the Business Roundtable. Who is part of that?
So the Business Roundtable is a trade organization, and it is also a lobbying organization. And so it has, again, for many years stated without equivocation that the purpose of the public corporation or of a corporation that it is to maximize value for shareholders and that shareholders matter more than other folks around the table, so to speak. On Monday, they announced a new statement. Beginning with these words, Americans deserve an economy that allows each person to succeed through hard work and creativity and to lead a life of meaning and dignity. While we believe in the free market system, and now I'm paraphrasing, right, business has an incredibly important role to play in that, and that means that individual companies have to be committed to all of our stakeholders. And so we get a statement about value to customers, employees, suppliers, communities, and shareholders. So they're elevating a bunch of other folks on paper to the same place that where shareholders have lived for a long time. I should say, for the benefit of our listeners, that this is signed by a host, about 30 quite prominent CEOs, from the CEO of American Express to the CEO of American Airlines to the CEO, Jeff Bezos, of Amazon, Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, and Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, who's been a prominent exponent of the fact that we can't go on just trying to value shareholders with no attention to all these other folks. So the Business Roundtable saying this made a great deal of news because they have historically been all about profit maximization for shareholders. Deep breath. What this means in practice, what these companies are actually going to do differently, right, after several years of using tax breaks for businesses, primarily for things like stock buybacks, which lower the number of shares outstanding and make shareholders wealthier by doing that, by contracting the supply of stock, whether these people are actually going to, do something differently, that's where the rubber meets the road. And we don't know the answer to that.
Well, Nancy, corporations have been criticized for quite a while for things like not paying any corporate taxes, for excessive compensation for their executives, for environmental impact. The list goes on and on.
Yep.
Why? And certainly, corporations have been aware of that. Why do you think this kind of statement is coming right now?
Yeah, that's really an important question, Judith. I think it has a lot to do with, again, a series of if you will, wins now with all good reason, with all good justification, buffeting business from these massive discrepancies in what the five or six most important people in a company make to the average worker. Right now, in public corporations in America, the relationship between the median salary of the employees in those corporations and the CEO salary is now 254 times. So a CEO makes 254 times what the median pay is for employees in an organization. That's just crazy. It's destructive. It's terribly unbalanced. It's contributing to economic inequality. I think that's a piece. I think a second piece is the political wins, if you will, and a series of very popular candidates, not just Bernie Sanders, but Elizabeth Warren and other candidates calling for much more aggressive regulation of business. From we got to break up tech, right? We got to break up these tech companies, to we really have to do something about the way the big banks are organized. So there's a huge groundswell of American citizen interest in calling business to account now in a new way. I think the growing political role of business as corporate, as citizens, employees, and all kinds of activists see it. Remember Charlottesville, right, in that terrible moment in American history when a white supremacist action in that city, right, claimed a life and became violent. Right after that, President Trump said there were good people on both sides. That was perceived to be such an incendiary, such an inappropriate, such an unethical remark that Ken Frazier, the CEO of Merck, a large medical device company, stepped off an advisory council to the president, and that led to a whole number of other people stepping off, because these CEOs perceived that their employees and their other stakeholders, right, wouldn't respect them and would call them, again, on the carpet for doing that. So you now have this new, incredibly important force of business now being responsible for what they stand for and how they do it. And I think last, but by no means least, is the extraordinary interest now and the ticking time bomb of the global environment and business's role in that. So you add all those things up, and it simply can't appear to be business as usual anymore. And so I think this statement is coming out in response to those kind of powerful, right, forces from a variety of different groups and individuals.
Something you said, Nancy, I thought was especially interesting. You said that, you know, especially with the candidates who are hoping to be the nominee on the Democratic side, calling for accountability and some restraint on corporations. It kind of reminds me of situations where corporations may be at risk, I will say, from their perspective, of more regulation. And they say, wait, we'll do it ourselves. Promise. Let us handle this.
Cross my heart and hope to die. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, again, that's why I say, you know, these are very smart, very, very skilled people politically and in all kinds of other ways. Right. Is this right, in a sense, a group of people saying we've got to go public saying, cross my heart and hope to die, we're going to do things differently and we're not just going to be about shareholder value. By the way, almost all of the people on this list are paid heavily based on how high they can get their stock price, which creates a very, very interesting and I think ultimately destructive conflict of interest, or certainly if you look at the way things have played out in terms of the ratio between executive compensation and everyone else. So they're now trying, I think, right, to forestall something they see coming and to cool, if you will, the pressure on the part of all kinds of folks for significant change in how business does its business. To be very candid, I'm not sure, unless we begin to see where the rubber meets the road and changes pretty quickly in how these different CEOs comport their companies and themselves, I'm not sure this is going to make a great deal of difference.
We're talking right now about the changing purpose of corporations with Nancy Kane. She's a historian at the Harvard Business School and the author of Forged in Crisis, The Power of Courageous Leadership in Turbulent Times. And let's go to the phones, and Jeff in Oconto is up. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I'd like to ask your guests to give an example of companies that are reverting to the type of companies that our parents and grandparents grew up with. I believe that's what I heard her say. And when I think about my grandparents especially, I think of violent anti-union busting companies. And in my parents' time, more not so violent, but still many companies anti-union.
Great. Well, thanks for that call, Jeff. And Nancy, some examples.
Sure. Let me take one that I think most of our listeners will know, or most of your listeners will know, of Whole Foods. So that company was founded, I don't know, 30 years ago by a very contrarian capitalist. He calls himself someone who practices conscious capitalism, named John Mackey. That's a company where almost all of the stock held by employees, in most public corporations, this is exactly the reverse, Jeff, but in that company, some 70 or 80% of the stock that's held internally is held by workers that are not senior leaders of the company. And in most companies, it's exactly the reverse. Almost all the public stock in most public corporations is held by the C-suite, by the CEO and the other executive vice presidents of different functions. So Mackey set out to start a company in which everyone would rise. Suppliers would rise. Local food producers would rise. In which employees could build a career there and would be paid well. He doesn't like unions, Jeff, to your point, but there's been very little success organizing Whole Foods because people are paid well, they build careers, they get raises, they hold stock, and they have a very, very good reputation along all these kind of metrics like, you know, environmental sustainability, right? Stakeholder relations in communities. So there's a company which Wall Street likes sometimes and other times hates that has been very successful building value for all kinds of folks. Let me mention another one, also well known in the same rough space, Starbucks, a company that has really tried to deliver value to its people in all kinds of ways, from healthcare benefits to career development to paying their employees well and providing things like college education for their employees, et cetera. So there's a company, again, Howard Schultz has been an explicit proponent that we can't just be about shareholders and Wall Street. Another company, Costco, right? Another retailer, interestingly, where from the very beginnings, from James Senegal's founding of that company back in, you know, 40 years ago, it has been a company where, again, value has been shared very broadly among those different stakeholders. One last one, Patagonia. I don't know how these all come to be in retail spaces, but Patagonia, the outdoor wear and outdoor equipment manufacturer, where, again, you have we exist to serve the communities, our customers, our employees, our vendors, the people that we depend on. Right? That definition, which gets to the heart of what the business roundtable is saying, whether they do anything about it or not, those are really good, very successful companies, by the way, that have a different view of how you serve the people you serve and what you owe them.
Thanks for that call, Jeff. And on Facebook, we had a few listeners weigh in. Neil writes, look what happened to Ford when he started paying workers $5 a day and they could afford to buy the cars they were making.
Exactly.
Greed is not everything. Larry writes, corporations should be concerned for more than their bottom line, especially since they represent such a large power block, us, the collective national interest. And Jacqueline weighed in, an economy's purpose is to work for the people, not people working for the economy. So it does seem like this message, it could get some traction with people, Nancy, but how are we going to be able to tell if this is an actual shift or if this is just a different message that's being put out without much behind it?
We'll know pretty soon, right? For example, if I were Tim Cook, one of the 181 CEOs who signed this, the CEO of Apple, I go out there on the public stage in the next week and say, right, I'm going to raise wages, or I want to support a rise in the minimum wage, or here's what we have committed to in terms of environmental sustainability, and here's the hits we'll take in the short run to our bottom line in order to invest in environmental sustainability. What's so interesting about the comments that come through on Facebook and other ways from your listeners is these are people saying, wait a minute, for the long run, customers are employees. They need to make a living wage. In the long run, we have to have an environment that is sustainable. In the long run, we have to have decent relations that are stable in our communities. A lot of what has now gone as unquestioned wisdom in the business community about maximizing shareholder value is proving, in all these different ways we've discussed, to be ultimately fairly short-lived. So I think we're going to need to see from these CEOs quickly that their money is behind their mouths and that these folks are interested in the long game. And the long game includes a lot more people than just the folks that hold a lot of shares of stock in a company.
Well, Nancy, lots to talk about, lots to think about. Thanks so much for joining us today.
A real pleasure. Thanks for having me, Judith.
Nancy Kane is a historian at the Harvard Business School and author of Forged in Crisis, The Power of Courageous Leadership in Turbulent Times. We talked with her about the Business Roundtable's new perspective on the purpose of corporations. They said that instead of just maximizing profit, they should be talking about other stakeholders, including customers, employees, suppliers, and local communities.